United States versus Kincaid. Mr. Cook.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Dan Cook. I'm attorney with the Federal Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois. I represent the appellant, Mr. Telly Kincaid, in this appeal. We raised two issues in this appeal. They're both procedural issues. The first is concerns 28 U.S.C. section 636. Essentially, the argument is that the district court erred failing to conduct a de novo review of the magistrate's disposition of Mr. Kincaid's pro se suppression motion.
You know, this raises a very basic problem and one that seems to recur not only in the district court, but here. What should courts do when a defendant is represented by counsel but seeks to file pro se motions?
Well, I think this court has held that it can either consider them or not. So apparently it's a discretionary decision. Each court can decide.
Wouldn't that have been the same then with Judge Crabb?
If she would have made that decision, yes. Problem is she didn't make that decision. The magistrate.
Well, she made the decision by not considering it, I guess.
But she wasn't the one who didn't consider it. It was in the magistrate's written.
The magistrate, that's where it came up, in the magistrate, with the magistrate.
Right. And our argument, it's really a simple argument. The magistrate said in the footnote, I'm not considering it. Mr. Kincaid then filed objections. The last objection was, please, district court, consider my motions. The order, the district court's order, doesn't address that. If you read the order, it's very clear that the court identifies the counsel motions, addresses them, and then in the last sentence of the order, it says, I'm denying docket entries 1, 2, and 3, whatever they are. They coincide with the counsel motions. So it's clear from this record that there was no de novo review, and that's a statutory requirement. And it's important, and I think the Supreme Court case on this, Thomas v. Arm, that's a 1986 case we cited, that's kind of the initial case the Supreme Court took out the Magistrates Act. And essentially, if you read that case, basically the idea is, you know, a magistrate's decision isn't necessarily the law. I mean, the district court makes rulings. The district court decides motions to suppress. So if you have a magistrate doing it and the district court not reviewing it, in reality, there's nothing has happened. So that's the fundamental problem with this case, is that the district court didn't do its job.
Well, if we sent it back, wouldn't Judge Crabb be free to say, I'm not going to consider pro se filings?
Yes, I think she could.
So you're right back where you started.
Yes. I don't think she will, though, to my personal opinion. And I think that has a lot to do with the second issue. But we think Mr. Kincaid's counsel below simply picked the wrong issues. And we think there are facts in dispute on the issues that he wanted raised, and that Judge Crabb will consider that on remand and rule on those accordingly. Now, just to address, the government's brief really is not very responsive to ours. Their first argument has to do with the plea agreement. They basically say that he didn't condition his right to appeal the pro se motions. We completely disagree with that. If you read the plain language of the plea agreement, you know, it says essentially that he can appeal, you know, he's in any adverse determination on his motions to suppress. It doesn't say counseled motions. It doesn't differentiate between those. We've cited a number of cases in our reply brief where this court interprets plea agreements. Any ambiguity is interpreted in favor of the defendant. This court holds the government to the literal terms of the plea agreement.
Aren't the literal terms more specific? During the execution of the search warrant? So that the pro se motions are actually outside of the plea agreement conditional plea?
Excuse me?
The language in the plea agreement as to what he was preserving for review by the appellate court for his conditional review went to the issue of the execution of the search warrant, not to the pro se motions regarding his consent.
Now, it says an adverse determination of his motions to suppress. It's a direct quote. It doesn't say an adverse determination of his counsel motion to suppress. Just says an adverse determination of his motion to suppress. And on the same day, the very same day he signed that plea agreement, that's the day of the ex parte hearing on March 21. And at that hearing, the magistrate discussed the merits of the pro se motions, and in the context of discussing plea agreements, told Mr. Kincaid that defendants often enter into conditional guilty pleas and reserve their rights to appeal denials of suppression motions. Not only that, the district court filed, docketed, and made the pro se records part of the record that day. And then told Mr. Kincaid, quote, if your choice is to take a deal and then go to the Court of Appeals, you have an absolute right to do that. I mean, the language on this record, considering that those statements were told to Mr. Kincaid apparently an hour or so before he actually signed the plea agreement, there's just no way on this record that the government's argument makes sense. I mean, not
but
on
he
this
was
record.
Told he was the magistrate judge was put in one of those tricky situations where the defendant is filing motions when he's represented.
Right.
And so during that discussion, he, although he addresses them to assuage the defendant's concerns that possibly his attorney didn't raise those motions and he has them personally, the magistrate judge addressed them. But the fact that you want Judge Crabb to review those when the magistrate judge said, I'm not reviewing those, he discusses them, but the footnote is clear. I'm not ruling on those motions.
Well, and that's what Judge Crabb needs to review. We're not saying Judge Crabb has to review the motions. We're saying Judge Crabb has to review the magistrate's decision not to review the motions. That's what 636B1 provides. And that's what Congress provided when it, you know, enacted the Magistrates Act. It said, you know, we're going to allow magistrates, but we're going to put this, you know, this provision in place to what magistrates do that is reviewable by district court. So that's what we're asking. It's really a very simple argument and statutorily required, and we think it's really not even debatable.
But the opinion isn't addressing whether he should review them. There's no analysis in the magistrate judge's report and recommendation regarding whether these are correctly before me. They're not. He doesn't find them to be correctly before him because the defendant is represented at that time. So he's only giving a report and recommendation regarding the attorney filed motions.
But he's, I don't know how that's, I mean, in the footnote it says I'm not considering these motions. That's a recommendation to the district court not to consider the motions.
No, he didn't consider them. It's not a recommendation not to. He never analyzed whether he should or should not consider them.
But the magistrate can't do that. The district court has to make that determination if it's objected to. That's the law. That's 636B1. A magistrate can't just say that.
Well, what if the magistrate just did not address it?
Then if Mr. Kincaid objected to it, then the district court would have to address it.
How can Mr. Kincaid object?
Because his motions weren't considered.
Well, he has counsel, right?
Sure.
Well, how can Mr. Kincaid himself object if he has counsel?
Well, that's kind of a catch-22, I guess.
Yes, exactly right. And that's what pro se filings are, catch-22.
I mean, luckily, I guess we have the footnote in this case, so it's not an issue.
But hypothetically, though, if he hadn't addressed it and the counsel didn't object to it, it wouldn't be an issue for the district court, would it?
I guess hypothetically, maybe not. If I can reserve the rest of my time. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Peter Giroux for the United States.
Giroux, let me start. There was reference in ex parte hearing. Was this because the government wasn't present at this
hearing? Yes. And what it was situations where, and it brings forth the context by which the discussion of his pro se motions came up. And these ex parte hearings took place because the defendant wanted new counsel. He wanted certain motions filed, and the counsel, two very experienced counsel, sequentially rejected his request to have these motions filed. They weren't going to file them. And what happened in these cases, and what happened, and you can tell by reading the record before Judge Crocker, the magistrate judge, was that he was trying to address why he was, Mr. Kincaid was not receiving ineffective assistance of counsel. He was not receiving ineffective assistance of counsel because the court then started to address, in a way, the merits of these motions, pro se motions that he was putting forward. And that's the context by which there's any discussion of these pro se motions. But over and over again, the magistrate indicates that these motions aren't going to be filed, they aren't going to be considered, and if Mr. Kincaid wants to preserve the ineffective assistance, he certainly can do so.
Were they actually received for filing?
Well, they were because the court is trying to assuage Mr. Kincaid's desire to have a record present. The mere allowing of the filing of them without striking them or without doing them was simply so, okay, Mr. Kincaid, I can tell you're upset. You just need to read that record. You can tell what Judge Crocker's dealing with. He's got a defendant who's upset that the lawyers, two very experienced lawyers, aren't agreeing with him. And he's trying to tell him, look, I'm not going to give you yet another lawyer because, quite frankly, your motions don't really have anything. But look, if you are concerned about this, you're going to have a right to contest this. You can claim ineffective assistance of counsel. And that's what's important to understand, because at the last ex parte hearing, it wasn't just that there was a question about preserving Mr. Kincaid's motions to suppress, as if he didn't understand, gee, am I preserving my counsel's motion to suppress or my own motion to suppress? Because the court goes on and says on page 39 of docket 109, it is common for defendants to take the deal from the prosecutor but reserve the right to appeal pretrial motions. And you could reserve to raise the right to raise on appeal ineffective assistance of counsel. You can spell it out. You can say, if I get a bad ruling from the court on my suppression motions, I want to appeal those to the Court of Appeals. I also want to appeal the Court of Appeals, my attorney's failure to file the motions. In other words, the court's saying, look.
This just brought something to mind. My recollection, it's been a long time, maybe Judge Kendo can know it. Are district courts supposed to involve themselves in plea agreements?
No. It's my understanding, and I think it's Rule 17. I could be incorrect on that. But they're not in, I don't think he was involving himself. I think at this point.
Well, that was a step towards it.
It may have been a step towards it, but I think that the real question was, is that. And I think, and there's other parts of the record where the court says, look, I'm not going to say anything on it, and he backs off. I'm only excerpting a little portion of it, and perhaps by doing that it made it appear somewhat out of context. I think Judge Crocker's clear that he's not going to get involved with it. I do believe Judge Crocker knew that there was a plea in the works that was happening. But the point...
Mr. Cook,
yes,
claims that the only... that all of these decisions are before the court under this conditional plea, citing to the line in the plea that says... entering a conditional plea of guilty, reserving by this plea agreement letter his right to have an appellate court review an adverse determination of his motions to suppress. But that line is preceded in the plea agreement by the defendant has filed motions to suppress evidence seized during the execution of search warrants in October of 2007. Those were not the bases for the pro se motions that were not addressed by the court. So how do we even have jurisdiction to address the issue of the pro se filings and whether he didn't reserve his right to argue that the magistrate judge did not or address them and the district court judge did not review them?
Well, and I think you're absolutely right. And that is really the government's first argument in its brief, is that this court has no jurisdiction to do that because he essentially waived that right by not preserving it in the plea agreement. In an ideal situation, and in a situation that would be perfect, would the docket numbers themselves would be specifically identified. But there is absolutely, and it's pointed out by the government, there's absolutely no ambiguity by any party that we were only dealing with the motions filed by the defense attorneys. His motions, his pro se motions, weren't going to be considered. There was no determination. They weren't going to be the subject of the plea agreement. There's nothing on the record quite frankly, to indicate otherwise. The only language that Mr. Cook brought up was this language that I read to you, in which on 109 on page 39, in which the court clearly distinguishes between your counsel's failure to raise the motion to suppress go to an ineffective assistance claim, not to the motions that are not going to be considered. Because if you look at the page 38 of docket 109, right before that, he goes, I've looked at your arguments. He's speaking about the pro se motions. I've looked at all your letters. I've read them. I have done the case research. They are too late, and you have an attorney, which is the main reason I'm not considering them. So he's telling them they're not. They're just not going to be part of the plea. Does he have a remedy? Yeah, he has a remedy under 2255, if that was the case. It's just that is what is not going to happen here. The Turner case, which this court decided in 2007 and is cited in the government's brief, is almost directly on point. And in that case, this court said it is the failure, or rather it is the failure of the parties to address that there's no obligation on the district court to even consider the pro se motions when he has counsel. And that is exactly our situation here. There was no obligation of the district court to consider these pro se motions. There was no preservation of his remedy.
Well, I guess what you're saying then is, back to the plea agreement, just to be clear, where the first sentence of that paragraph 12 said the defendant has filed motions to suppress evidence seized during the execution of search warrants in October 2007. Now, I sort of recall that his pro se did address some of that, didn't it?
No, his pro se motions, there were two motions to suppress. One was a search warrant executed at the defendant's house, and the other was a search warrant of the actual safe that was found in Robinson, the third party's house.
What's the seized during the search in October 2007? What is that?
The search of October 2007 was, and I think what the court is getting at, the only thing that occurred without a search warrant, if I can phrase it that way, the only thing that occurred without a search warrant is when the defendant went, or when the government went in and obtained the consent from Mr. Robinson to take the safe out of the house. They then got a subsequent search warrant for the safe. Mr. Kincaid's arguments were that Mr. Robinson didn't have the ability to consent to that seizure. In docket 43, which is the other attorney, made an argument relating to the seizure of the warrantless seizure of the safe. That was also addressed. But Mr. Kincaid's theory of why the search couldn't take place related to this sort of consent idea, and he wanted to take that
consent and that sort of thing, I guess.
I'm sorry.
He was trying to say that he had to consent or something like that.
Right. It
wasn't his apartment.
Right, and all I'm simply saying is that it never culminated to a determination. And because it never culminated a determination, there was no preservation under 11A2. And without a determination by the court, it just never was preserved. I don't think it was the intent of the parties to ever preserve it. He still has a remedy. In summary, Your Honors, Mr. Kincaid submitted basically the true pro se motions. This court, or rather the court, did not make a determination on them. The two counsels successively that he had wouldn't file the motions. They disagreed with them. He didn't ask to represent himself. There was no waiver of the right to counsel. There was nothing to indicate that he had the right to file any motions other than what his counsel were filing. And on that basis, we'd ask that you affirm the conviction and judgment order of the district court. Thank you.
Mr. Cook? 1.5 minutes.
This language in the plea agreement, the defendant has filed motions to suppress evidence seized during the execution of search warrants in October 2007. That I mean, that goes to every single thing he filed.
No,
I mean,
it doesn't. It doesn't go to whether it was it's the execution of a search warrant.
But
it doesn't go to the consent. It doesn't go to the other issues. If he wanted to preserve those in a conditional guilty plea, he had every opportunity to specifically say and to preserve the issues regarding entry into the home or seizure of the safe.
Well, under your theory, then, all three of the motions should have been spelled out, but they weren't. I mean, the bottom line is his pro se motions were motions to suppress evidence seized during the execution of search warrants in October 2007. That's what they were. I mean, that's why he's in jail for 135 months.
Say that again. I thought it was a taking of the safe without a search warrant.
Well, that was one of his counsel motions, which...
That was a counsel motion.
Yes, which still involves a motion to suppress evidence seized during the execution of search warrants in October 2007. Yeah, I don't know how you draw a distinction. I mean, the counsel and the pro se motions all attempted to seize evidence seized during the execution of search warrants in October 2007. I mean, there's no other way to put it. That's what they were trying to do. Now, two of those counsel motions were... Oh, my time's up.
Well, you can finish your thought.
Two of the counsel motions had to do with the search warrant. One didn't. One had nothing to do with the search warrant. So even a reading to somehow extrapolate the term search warrant as qualifying that paragraph doesn't even make sense because one of the counsel motions had nothing to do with the search warrant. So anyway, for everything else, we'd ask for a remand. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Thanks to both counsel. Case is taken under advisement. Court will be